Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Dan, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if they have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. Expected to be joined by IBF and WBC junior welterweight champion Devin Alexander, who will talk about his upcoming fight, a unification fight against Timothy Bradley. The fight will take place January 29th. It will be on HBO. No venue as of now, but they're still working on that part. And so we're going to talk to Devin about that fight. It should be interesting to get his thoughts there. And we're also going to be joined by Kurt Heeling of ProBasketballTalk.com. Kurt's going to give us the lowdown on this first week of the NBA as this week unfolds, and see how things shape out in the NBA. And speaking of the NBA, and before I do that, Jeremy?
Paulie.
How are you?
What's doing, man?
All good.
So, you know, it's been an interesting week. I travel, you know, from the East Coast to the West Coast, and certainly watching my boys do it up. You know, I'm getting ready for a parade. Out on the left coast.
Hey, your boys are seemingly two games away from raising that trophy and winning the World Series. Improbable.
You got to really be kicking yourself if you're out there and you're a Phillies fan. You really got to be kicking yourself.
I don't know why you would be kicking yourself. I mean, you kicking yourself from the point of view that yes, you had the opportunity to win the World Series and ultimately become the first team in a long, long time to go to the World Series three straight years. But they ran into some a pitching juggernaut here in the Giants and a hot team and a team that looks like is like Kelly, like Beyonce, like Michelle, Destiny's Child. And looking at that team, you're thinking that this just is their year. And, I mean, you had a situation, if you look at them in their regular season, your boys, they were behind the Padres for a great portion of the year, and the Padres went on some 10, 11-game losing streak. And from there, that allowed the Giants to get back into the division race and ultimately allowed the Giants to take the division lead and ultimately win the division. So improbable in that respect, and improbable. You got Cody Ross and Juan Uribe, and everybody seems to be stepping up at some point. You got the pitching, you got the bullpen, and it's a great combination. And right now they're up 2-0 on the Texas Rangers in a World Series that if you're Fox, you got to be a little mad at, because you had an opportunity to have the Phillies and the Yankees in there, which would have been more of a ratings bonanza than what you have here. But I mean, it is what it is, and the Giants seem to be Destiny's Child right now.
Well, if that's the slant you want to take, I mean, you're out there in Loserville, and I have to respect that. I mean, if you're a Phillies fan, you really have to kick yourself, period, point blank. You have a chance to walk into a World Series against a Texas team that just basically looks like a deer in headlights, and they would have walked away the same way the Giants will, you know, as a World Series champion. I mean, for me, it doesn't matter. The great prognosticator, you know, has done it again. you know, I'm out there on the left coast, and I'm enjoying every minute of this. And if I'm Ryan Howard, I hope you learn something here, which is just being Ryan Howard isn't good enough. You got to be able to produce. And Philadelphia Phillies fans, they'll be out there in droves next year supporting this team. And they're great. They're the World Series champions of the regular season, which gets them nowhere. But for you, Paul, it'll just be another song away. So it's a futile battle for me to fight, and I learned that about you. You know, you're the loser's champion. You're out there singing songs for losers like McNabb, who did nothing but greatness during the regular season and got his one Super Bowl, and he's throwing up with his nerves, and then you're writing songs about the man. You want him to stay.
Well, I wanted him to stay, and I mean, that's another story for another time, but like I said before, I mean, like you said, the Phillies did have a golden opportunity here, and it looks like the Rangers look like they're done here. And now the Giants are poised to raise a trophy. Who would have thought it?
In my opinion, you have to be sick. If you're a Philadelphia Phillies fan, you should be. Yeah, I am. I am sick to my stomach with the fact and the notion that they're not.
Well, why would you be sick? I mean, you're a Bear. You changed allegiance last week.
I didn't change allegiance. Just being a great prognosticator, Paul. That's what you know. And one day you'll learn about that. One day you'll learn that with great power, Paul, comes great responsibility. You know, and there are people out there, such as yourself, there are people out there that are very thirsty, that are sipping from the haterade, they look in the mirror and they see things, let me finish, they see things they want to be, they see things they could have been, and because they're so thirsty and they are drinking from that hate cup, you know, and I'm out there, Paul, I know how it feels, you know, I was there, you know, with you at one point, I drank from the hate. And I say to you all the time, with great power, you know, comes great responsibility. And my responsibility is to the fans. They need to know the truth.
At the same time, with all that nonsense and everything that you said, Mr. Great Procrastinator, I should say. Okay, prognosticator, I'll give you that. It's not hard to prognosticate when your team is up 3-2 already in the series. So, in terms of what you're talking about, in terms of prognosticating and all that other beautiful and SAT-like words, I'm not going to call you a great procrastinator, prognosticator, or whatever you want to call yourself, just because your team was up 3-2 and you predicted they would win the series. Whoop-de-doo.
Wait a minute, but Paul, let's go back to the Lakers. Let's get to Devin Alexander.
Yeah. We'll have this conversation later. We are now being joined by WBC and IBF junior welterweight champion Devin Alexander. Devin, how are you, sir?
What's going on, my friend?
How are you?
Thanks for having me again.
And thanks for coming on. Are you still on the West Coast?
Huh?
Are you still you're back in St. Louis? I know you had the photo shoot in the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm back in St. Louis now.
Oh, all right.
I just got back last night.
Oh, okay. And so we definitely thank you for getting up this. Well, it's 12:00 out there, but we thank you for getting up.
Well, 12:00, so I'm usually up.
All right. Now you were out in California. You had the photo shoot. I believe Marcos Maidana and Amir Khan and Timothy Bradley, all you guys were out there. And how was the photo shoot? And how was it being around those guys?
It wasn't good, but you know what? They had us separated. They didn't want us to cross wires or anything like that. So they did a separate shoot with each guy. And I kind of liked it that way because I don't like to see my opponent before I'm finna fight him anyway, or unless I have to. So I didn't want to mingle because I'm going to be fighting either of those guys in the future anyway.
Now, speaking of Amir Khan, I mean, he's had some words for you about you recently. He was quoted as saying that after watching his last fight, talking about you against Kotelnik, there were a lot of weaknesses. think Maidana has more skill and heart and everything. When you hear those type of comments coming from Amir Khan, what are your thoughts?
He just wants to make his opponent seem bigger than what he is, and he wants everybody to think that his fight is going to outshine the me and Timothy Bradley fight, I think, in my opinion. But he knows Medina don't have more skill than me. He's not dumb. He's just trying to hype his fight up, trying to outdo the January 29th, which is going to be the biggest fight at the 140-pound division. And I think we get more buzz than him in Medina fight, so he's going to try to pump it up as much as he can.
Well, and now, we spoke the last time.
This is your biggest fight, January 29th, like you said, it will be on HBO. You're going up against WBO junior welterweight champion Timothy Bradley, and this fight is for supremacy at 140. This is the biggest fight of your career up to this point. What is your mindset going into this fight?
My mindset going to be the same as any time I go in the ring, but I'm going to be more focused and more determined because I got a lot riding on this fight. This fight can bring me to superstardom like I want. Me and Timothy Bradley are considered the best 140 pounders in the world. And this fight can determine who's going to get the big fights and who's going to get the mega fights. And I'm just going to go on there and do what I've just been doing since I was 7 years old. And nothing's different. My coach always says nothing's different. It's just on a bigger stage, and I'm getting paid for it. So I'm not going to do nothing different. All I'm going to do is train harder, and we're going to come up with a master game plan.
Devin, how well prepared are you coming out of the Katonic fight where we had John right after the fight? You openly admitted that was definitively for you at that point a very big fight, and the nerves were there. How well prepared are you against Bradley and to be able to control your nerves against arguably your best opponent to date?
Well, you know what? The nerves came from me finding my hometown, and trying to impress the hometown and trying to just go in there and make the crowd all riled up, but it wasn't following the game plan. But when I fight out of town, there's no pressure at all, no pressure. And I love to fight out of town. I mean, most of the people out of town, they know me, but don't know me personally, as opposed to me fighting in St. Louis where people know me and they want me to do good so bad. So no pressure. I mean, I would love to fight in Vegas, love to fight in Miami. I mean, that would only excite me even more.
Any of the locations? Do you have a short list of where you probably will be fighting?
Yeah, they actually somebody emailed my coach yesterday, and they were saying either Vegas, Miami, or Atlanta. Those are the three that they have came up with or narrowed their search down to. So either one of those could be a possibility.
You don't have a preference per se.
I don't have a preference. We're just gonna go to work wherever it's gonna be at. I'm sure wherever it's gonna be at anyway, it's gonna be. Good turnout. It's going to be big regardless, right before the Super Bowl. And you know, this is my first time fighting on a championship box, so I'm definitely excited about that, too.
Now, Timothy Bradley, he is the WBO champion. He is undefeated like yourself. What does he bring to this fight?
What does he bring? He brings a lot of heart. I know he's going to come in shape. I know he's going to come in shape, and I know he's going to come prepared. But that's just not going to be enough, you know. In this fight, it's going to be who got the best skills and who can get to the punches faster. And I think I'm way faster than Bradley. My punch is going to be coming from a different angle than what he's been used to or has seen. He hasn't fought a slick softball like me, like I've been saying. And you guys are going to see January 29th how easy and how good that I'm going to be against Timothy Bradley.
And now, there was some issues with the IBF belt. As of right now, is this fight for the IBF belt? Are you going to be stripped of the IBF belt?
As of right now, it is. The fight is scheduled to be fought for both of my belts and both of his belts. So it's supposed to be a unification and whoever we're supposed to be undisputed champion of the world. So I don't know what the IBF is going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm not sure, but we're just going to have to see. My thing is I've been training, and I love the belts. I've been training my whole life to get the belts, you know, and it has saddened me to see them just take the belt from me, which I didn't know anything about a purse bid or me have to fight in Mabuza or whoever it is. So I would just be, you know, I just have to do what I have to do, because why would I go and fight $75,000 for $75,000 when I'm finna go get paid over $1 million for this fight? And that just doesn't make sense.
Exactly. Makes no sense. Well, is there, I mean, from your perspective, Devin, I mean, especially being a boxer, I mean, is this something that the boxing world really does need to take a look at and recognize that some of the rules and some of the idiosyncrasies are, to a certain degree, outdated, and not just outdated, like you said, it's risky for you to walk into the ring for really no value. I mean, it's your job, it's your profession to fight someone who really is not, I mean, it's really not worth your time to walk into the ring.
Well, I'm not saying it's not worth my time, but you have to look at it. You're right. You have to look at the situation, and, you know, who's to say, I mean, this is boxing. Who's to say I get in there and fight Mabuza and get caught with something I don't see, or, you know, just taking unnecessary stuff for granted. I mean, going into a fight, I get cut real bad or anything can happen. So why would I go into a fight knowing the situation is not a good situation and just trying to keep the belt? It doesn't make sense. Me and Bradley fight is way bigger than me and Mabuza. I think that's how I say his name. And whoever win this fight can possibly be a superstar. So I don't see why the IBF is doing it. I mean, they are getting 3% anyway, but I just don't know. I think politics is playing a big role in this. So I just don't know. I mean, I love the IBF belt. I love WBC belt. I love both of the belts that I got. I've been working my whole life to get them, but, I mean, I just got to do what's best for my career.
And your manager, Kevin Cunningham, talked about the offer that you're getting, the money that you're getting in this fight. He talks about how it could have been a lot better. But in your situation right now, your promoter is Don King, and then there have been fighters who have had problems with King in the past. How is your relationship with Don King?
Don's okay with me. He's okay with me. You know, he's just like any other promoter. You got to fight. You got to fight with him because every promoter wants to take the majority of the money. So you're always going to have to fight and do what you got to do to make sure you get an equal amount of share of what you're supposed to get. So I guess Don is cool. For now, I have no problem with him. So we'll just have to see as time goes on how when the real money get to crawling in, how he's going to turn or whatever.
And now, basically, right now, it's almost like you have a junior welterweight tournament going on with Marcos Maidana and then Amir Khan fighting for Khan's WBA belt in December. And then your fight with Bradley in January with all the belts on the line there. Is the next step after your win? Okay, after your win against Bradley, is the next step the winner of Maidana and Khan?
Well, Khan has already stated that he's trying to get I don't know if that's possible, but he's trying to get Mayweather fight or whatever. So I don't think he's going to want to fight the winner of Timothy Bradley or me. I think he's just talking. I think he just like to hear himself talk sometimes. I think he actually thinks he's the best out of the 140 pounds. I think he thinks he's the biggest draw, that he can dictate everything in the division, which he can't. And I think they are really swooping his head up, man. Really, he's really overrated in my opinion.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Devin. I mean, the fight you and Bradley are going to have definitively in terms of the talent level and the talent class of the younger, new generation of your class definitely appears to be, you know, this looks like the front runner. And a guy like Khan who comes in, and I'm glad you admitted it, he just really seems to run his mouth. He promotes himself, you know, almost like an actor, like a celebrity, and it's great to see. I think he does a lot for boxing in general, but I also wonder, you know, the opponents in his division, how serious do you guys take him from a boxing perspective?
I just don't take him seriously at all. I mean, I read an interview where he said he's going to sit there and fight with Mandana. He's not going to sit there and fight with Mandana. He's going to box. He's going to do his usual thing. I don't see him doing anything different. I think he still fights like an amateur to me. That's just me personally. He fought Kotelnik like an amateur. He hit and ran. And with Malignaggi, he did the same thing. And Malignaggi can't even hit. You know, my opinion, he just overrated. I mean, he's a good fighter. I take nothing from him. He's a good fighter. But I just think he's just well overrated. And I think being over there with Pacquiao, they really is souping him up a lot. And he's not getting the right ain't nobody telling him the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do. And I think nobody's telling him that he has to take baby steps before he can take giant leaps. So I think that's going to play a big factor with him being over there with Pacquiao, too. So his head's getting like a blimp over there.
So is he Reebok's number one track star?
He's good. I'm telling you, he's going to run December 11th. He says he's going to sit there and fight with Medina. I doubt it. I think he's going to box him, and he do his usual thing, which is running around the ring and hit and try not to get caught on the chin.
Now, how do you see that fight, Trent? How do you see that fight playing out?
Okay, and another point. If you think he ran with Kotelnik and Malignaggi, and Medina hit twice as hard, you know he's not just going to sit there and just take Medina punches. No way. But I think it's going to be a good fight. I do think.
That's why I say, Devin, I follow him. I think he certainly has, he knows, and I agree with you, his camp, being with Pacquiao, he has a lot of, he is a very smart guy he talks what fans in boxing want to hear. He knows every opponent, you know, he is definitively more boisterous and saying how he's going to go toe-to-toe with them. And if he does it, I want to see, in comparison to your fight where, I mean, it's the definitive two new young figureheads in the division, he's going after guys and fighting guys that are questionable. I mean, their talent is there, but they have had questionable paths.
Right. I agree. I agree 100%. I mean,
I've never been sold on him. Paul knows that. I think he's fun. He's entertaining. But I've never really been sold. You know, I think his last name is very fit description, you know, of his skills.
Right. I agree 100%.
I can say that. I know you can't, but I think
right.
he is a con. I think it's all hype, and it's smart.
Yeah.
His you know, his team is smart. They hype him. I mean, he has all the flash and all the glitter, but I have yet to see him walk in the ring and just, you know, knock people out
right.
the way he talks
right.
what he's going to do.
Right. I agree 100%. But I think with him being over there with Pacquiao, that he's getting a lot of exposure. He's getting a lot of exposure, and he talks a lot, and I think that's the big thing. But once you get in there with a real guy that's going to be right there with him and matches skill-wise and matches toe-to-toe with him, I think he's going to be in some trouble.
We're talking to Devin Alexander, IBF and WBC junior welterweight champion. And now, Devin, we didn't get your prediction. How do you see Khan and Mike Donovan playing out? Who do you expect to win that fight?
Well, I got two opinions. If you probably already know, but if Khan can stay away from Medina's power, then I think Khan's going to come out with the victory. Because he's good at staying away and not getting hit. He's good at that. And I don't see why he would change it up. But if he was to stand there and try to trade with Medina, I don't think that'd be good because Medina just keep throwing them all night until you fall. So we'll just have to see the fight. I got two opinions on that one. It can go either way.
Now, the right now, the 140-pound division, it's a tough division. It's a lot of names, Judah, Zab Judah, Amir Khan, Maidana, Victor Ortiz, yourself, Timothy Bradley. You recently have been quoted as saying if you get past this fight with Bradley, that you're looking at some big names like Pacquiao, Berto, Mayweather, and Mosley.
Right.
And
me and my coach put out a statement because Khan was talking like we actually need him after this fight. He was talking like he's the bigger draw. We were saying we don't need him because how can you be flawless when you've been knocked out? I mean, the best is no losses, I think, in my opinion. And he tries to act like he's not flawless, you know, and that's why we were saying that. We were saying that if we don't need him for real. We can fight bigger names after Timothy Bradley. We can go and fight at 147 some of the bigger names up there. Not speaking past Bradley, but, you know, them. That's the reason why we were saying what we were saying.
No, so your goal ultimately is to clean out 140. Now, are you at any point in your career? Do you think you'll step up to maybe 147?
I do. I think I am going to get bigger. I'm still 23. I think I am going to gain a little bit more muscle, until I go into my man strength. So, I think I am going to go up to 147. 40s. I'm still making 40 pretty easy, but I know I'm going to get bigger as time goes on, and I know I'm going to be able to move over to 147.
So, Devin, it seems like you're very comfortable right now, especially, and we've talked about this with you in the past, because you're so young and you've had this success, you're really not in a hurry to run through these divisions and make a mistake which may cost you.
No, I'm not. I mean, patience is the key to success, I think. And I've been taught that a long time ago. You know, you never want to rush to a situation and find yourself left out in the cold or whatever. So I just take one fight at a time. Like me and Bradley, I've been fighting Durango, I fought Kotelnik, I fought Gene Witter. Now, I think all those fights led me up to the Bradley fight, and I think it's right now is the time for me to fight Bradley, and I got the ability now to beat Bradley. And the next fight, you know, we're going to continue to just take it one fight at a time and taking smart fights, not taking dumb fights. And I'm not saying that I'm ready for Pacquiao. I'm not going to run out there and say I'm ready for Mayweather or the Shanes or whatever. I mean, it might come out of our mouth, but we're going to take it one fight at a time, but we're not going to go in there thinking we are ready for anything like that because I'm still learning at that, and, you know, it could be all hype when we do talk like that.
Now, the fight is 3 months away. Have you started training camp?
I've been training, doing a little strength training, but not too heavy because this camp we're going to go to work. We're going to be working, so we just try to save my body because we're going to be going to work. But we have been doing a little strength training and a little real work just to keep me tuned.
Now, where's training camp going to be held?
We'll be in Vegas. We'll be in Vegas again.
Okay.
Yeah, and we'll be in Mount Charles and getting ready.
So right now it's prediction time. Fight 3 months away, January 29th. HBO World Championship Boxing.
First time. This is big.
What's
my prediction? My prediction for the fight, you got, like, I'm not a man to talk stuff, and I'm not, but you guys are going to see Timothy Bradley, and I said that in my head all the time, that I'm going to expose Bradley. I'm going to expose his skills because people think Bradley is so good. Because you know what it is? He got there before everybody else did in the division. And now then he's considered one of the top dogs. So that's why he's considered one of the best. But not seeing what kind of skill he's possessed. Like, he doesn't have the skill of a Mayweather or a Shane. His skills are not like that. So I think on January 29th, I'll be exposing Bradley.
And people do forget that Timothy Bradley did go down against Kendall Holt.
Right.
Fight, you know, so he is susceptible to go down.
Right. I agree 100%. Now, I'm not predicting a knockout, but, you know, if I see it, I'm going to take it. So.
January 29th, HBO World Championship Boxing, Devin Alexander, WBC, IBF champion, Timothy Bradley, WBO, junior welterweight champion. The fight will be on HBO World Championship Boxing, January 29th, the week before the Super Bowl. Get ready. It's going to be a great one.
Right before the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. So
Definitely,
it's going to be a big fight, and it's a fight that
definitely.
The boxing world is looking forward to, and it's going to start off 2011, hopefully very nicely, and for your sake, hopefully it's very nice for you
right.
as well.
right.
And we definitely thank you for stopping by, sir, and again, we'd love
it.
To have you back after the fight, and hopefully it's a victory for you.
I appreciate it, I'm not going to talk to you guys before then, or if I don't talk to you guys before then, I'll talk to you afterwards, and I'll come on there and tell you how easy it was.
There you go.
Appreciate it. Okay.
Devin Alexander, 140-pound WBC and IBF champion, January 29th, get ready. On HBO World Championship Boxing. It should be an exciting fight, and a fight that the boxing world is definitely looking forward to. The numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. And I want to switch gears now to the NBA. Last night, big game, the home opener for the Miami Heat. The world was out. Everybody was out. It was a big game, and they faced the Orlando Magic. And it was close in the first half, but then the Heat just went on a big-time run, held the Magic to 25 second-half points, and ultimately they went on to the 96-70 victory. And last night, Dwayne Wade, it was his turn, and he stepped up, and he scored 26 points last night. And LeBron had a quiet 15, and he watched his team, and it seems like in game one against Boston, they didn't look good at all, and they lost that game. But you look at them now, the last two games, they beat the Sixers, blew the Sixers out. And then they go and for their home opener, they beat Orlando. But if you look at this team, and I'm looking at this team, I see a team right now that seems like some nights it's going to be Wade doing his thing, some nights it's going to be Bron doing his thing, and also maybe some nights where Chris Bosh will do his thing, but it seems like these guys so far are deferring to one another and really are trying to make this thing happen. So far they're 2-1. In the world,
well, but Paul, but honestly, and I want to ask you this, and I'm being serious, like, we've talked about this in the off season. Can they succeed without a clear, definite leader night in, night out?
Well, I think it's going to be a situation if LeBron is running hard and fast and hot, he's going to do it. If Wade is running hot, then he's going to do it. But as of right now, I guess they really truly haven't been in that last second. They haven't been in that last second situation where, you know, somebody's going to step up. Or somebody has been asked to step up and take that last shot. But if you look at the Boston game, that was LeBron's time to shine. He was the guy that was running hot, and then Wade struggled in that game. So LeBron did his thing there. And then if you look at yesterday's game, Dwayne Wade was on top of his game, and then LeBron only had 15 points, and did all the other stuff. But this team was just, they looked dominant yesterday, and they looked like what everybody thought they would be. Now, it's still, like I said, it's still early. We're only game three of an 82-game schedule. So in terms of whether this thing will continue to come together like this, it is, you still have, there's still questions, but as of right now, if you look at it, I think this team may come together, but I think that, that team in Boston is looking very, 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 very tough, very sharp, and very deep. So it should be interesting to see how the season continues to go, but as of right now, I mean, I was very impressed with what I saw from the Miami Heat. I mean, they blew out the Orlando Magic in their home.
I really am surprised that you're that impressed. I have to admit, Paul, I think that they hit expectations. I don't think they exceeded expectations, and I say that only because even though it was the opener, the loss to Boston to me indicates, again, the biggest problem that I think we talked about in the offseason is the lack for them of being, you know, going to be able to go up against a bigger team, you know, a more physical team than them. It was only the first game and so on. And that's why I say they're doing very well. They certainly, night in, night out, it's going to be hard when they all one night or in a seven-game series, if all three of them start to play well, you know, you can very easily see that they can run off 10, 15 games at a clip just based on what you've seen. But again, I still say there's a lot of questions.
Well, there's some questions still in terms of how they're going to – in terms of who's getting the last shot, how that's all going to work out. Their size is questionable. They have some questionable size. So they're in the point guard situation is a little questionable as well. So there's still questions with this team, and the depth is also questionable as well. So there's a lot of questions with this Miami Heat team. And this team is not – there's questions. So we can't definitely just say there is no questions with this team. There are questions with this Miami Heat team. But – what you saw last night was a team that seemed like it may come together, and it may come together. It might come together faster than we think, and it might be that dominant situation that everybody's been talking about. Also, Allen Iverson headed overseas to Turkey. Who would have thought that? Signed a 2-year, $4 million deal with the Turkish ball club. He had his news conference yesterday in New York City, and talked about how he had a great time playing in the NBA, and now he wants to show the world that he can still play at a high level. So maybe the next step is Turkey. And you didn't think it would play out this way for AI. You thought that maybe he would end his career in the NBA, and it's his rightful place. He belongs in the NBA. He deserves to end his career in the NBA. And he still maybe will end his career in the NBA. I mean, if he goes over to Turkey and proves that he's still got it and proves that he's still ball, he can still ball, then more than likely an NBA team may take a look. But he reached out to teams. And
I'm concerned why you say it's his, you know, he deserves. No one deserves, Paul.
He
doesn't
deserve anything, but I mean, when you've been in this league 17 years and scored over 24,000 points and won MVPs in this league, won scoring titles in this league, and still prove that you can still play a little bit. I mean,
he needs to take a backup role, Paul, and he won't do it.
Yeah, and he has proven that he was not willing to take a backup role, but he did take a backup role, almost like a leadership role with the Sixers last year, and he seemed to be a good soldier. He averaged 13 points in those 25 games that he had with the Sixers. But if you look at Allen Iverson, I think what's scaring a lot of NBA teams away from this guy is the situation in Memphis, is the situation in Detroit, where he both occasions kind of refused to come off the bench. So if you look at those two situations and you look at his history, it scared people away. It definitely scared people away.
Well, he said it again, but he said it again yesterday, Paul. I mean, he made it very clear in a couple of his interviews that he truly believes that he can still play at a high level in the NBA, and he believes that he is better than many of the starting, you know, point guards and guards in the NBA. And I mean, maybe is there some truth to that
Well, I think there is, but I guess he isn't realizing the business that he operates in, and youth will dominate. And so no team is looking for an Allen Iverson to start because, you know, they need to get younger players on the court and teach them the lessons perhaps that Allen Iverson didn't learn. Can he add championship depth to a lot of teams? Yes. I mean, and I think if you're Allen Iverson, shame on you for not taking advantage of that. I mean, look at Shaquille O'Neal. The guy was smart. You know, he could have held out for a big money contract and certainly could have probably made buku dollars going overseas. But Shaq didn't need to do that, Paul.
But the thing with AI is he did not get any offers.
That's because he didn't make any offers because last season and the season before that, he ruined his career by opening his big mouth, which, again, I'll use Shaquille O'Neal because if Shaq would have came out and told people that he wanted a starting role and he wanted this and he wanted that, again, he would have found himself in a really precarious
I agree with you, but with AI, Allen Iverson has said that he would be willing to take a backup role. I mean, you know, actions and words sometimes are just a big difference, definitely a big difference in action and words. But he did acknowledge, and at this point in his career, he really doesn't have a choice or didn't have a choice pretty much to take. He had to take a backup role if he was going to play in the NBA. But, again, his history tells you otherwise, and it was a situation where he had to go overseas to continue his career. And maybe if he plays hard and does what he has to do overseas and proves that he still has game, maybe he will make it back to the NBA. We're now being joined by ProBasketballTalk.com's Kurt Healy. Kurt, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, Kurt, right now the big news in the NBA, Carmelo Anthony, the official, has finally said that he wants to be traded. You heard in the offseason that he never said that he wanted to be traded. He said at the press conference to start training camp and everything that he never wanted to be traded. But now he officially came out and said that he wanted to be traded. How do you see the situation playing out? Does he get traded during this year, or do they just let this thing go by?
No, I think he gets moved. I think you need to clarify how that broke out, too. His people behind the scenes were always saying he wanted to be traded, specifically to the Knicks or Chicago. But they always wanted to move him. If Carmelo Anthony comes out and says, I want to get traded, he gets a massive fine and creates all sorts of public relations problems. So he even last night after the game kept saying, oh, I'm just trying to keep my options open, yada, yada, yada. Nobody believes that. That's what he has to say. That's his public stance, but you can be sure that his people behind the scenes have been working for a while to get him moved. And Denver doesn't really have a choice unless they enjoy watching that Cleveland Raptors game last night and said, wow, we want to be like those guys. They have to move him. They have to get something.
If you look at Denver, the way they are constructed, they could contend in the West with Carmelo Anthony. Now, Do you go with the stance, okay, let's try to get something now, or do you just maybe let the season ride out and see how far you can get in these playoffs and possibly change this guy's mind?
Nuggets can contend in the West if the Lakers come back to the pack, which is kind of true of Oklahoma City and Portland and a lot of teams right now. It's the Lakers and then the rest of the West. Yeah, they can contend, sort of. They can have a good season. And, I mean, if you look at what everybody else in the West said, from George Karl with the Nuggets, the Suns, to the Spurs, it's the Western Conference Finals and see what happens. Because they realize that if it's a healthy Laker team, that nobody's getting past them in the West. I've seen what they've done with this roster. They've kind of taken a step back. They've got Kenyon Martin being a problem. I think it's, you know, if I'm them, I'm thinking it's time to – I've got a big chip with Carmelo Anthony that I can maybe get some pieces for. At the same time, I've got Chauncey. If I'm going to trade one, I'm going to trade both. Not to the same place, but I mean and really jumpstart my rebuilding process rather than get hung up. Because, if they wait, he'll go to the Knicks next summer and they'll get nothing for him, or they'll get one of those kind of cheesy sign-in trades. But like Cleveland and, they get a big trade exception. They've got to find a way to get it done.
Well, but Kurt, one of the things I wonder about is, they waited on this because now the value was probably there in the off season, and now you're just starting a season, and you almost have to wait until deadlines because teams really kind of have to see where pieces are going to fit, especially, and I don't disagree with you, if you move Carmelo, you really have to move the whole roster. You have to really blow everything up. And are teams out there looking to add right now so new into the season?
No, they you're right. The mistake was and was not either doing it this summer or it's the trade deadline. But, you know what this reminds me of was Toronto when they had to trade Vince Carter. Which was the, hey, we're going to wait. Better offers are going to come in. No, these teams are going to realize you're up against the wall and your offers are going to get worse and worse. People are going to start to lowball you. And suddenly, that you know, the Knicks can bring in some more pieces and maybe that deal starts to look better or, you know, the not Noah deal out of Chicago starts to look better or something because, although I don't, doesn't want Bang just because he's a fine player. He's nice, but he's a massive contract. It's like 4 years, $40 million
or
something crazy.
And when you look at when you really look at where and what the value is going to be for Carmelo, it's almost unfortunate because other than the Knicks and maybe draft picks or Chicago, there's really nothing else. And they're going to lose out on this where they probably should have addressed this when, I mean, even before the off season, they should have addressed this. And there was talk last year, that he was going to move and they, cause now they're looking at, you know, being in a down market where everyone, this was the big off season and everyone knew that. And now teams, they don't have the players, they don't have the room. And more than anything, you look at the Nuggets, and everyone kind of knows now that as you said, they have to trade them.
Yeah, and I think there are, you know, the Nets can still be players. If you want an off the wall team that could theoretically throw some really nice options at them, is Portland. I've heard that rumor. It can make a lot of sense to me, and that Portland's a stats driven team in a lot of ways, and Carmelo's not a. The staff guys don't love him, so I'm not sure how well that works out, but they've certainly got pieces, and, you know, now with Bayless gone, they've got a pick, and they've got things they could throw. So there are people out there. The other part of it is that teams are hesitant heading into the new collective bargaining agreement. Unless you think you can contend, unless you can think you can take that step, you don't want to take on the big Carmelo Anthony salary, and then it's going to be a lot harder to build around him. You know, the Knicks are willing to do that. So Chicago's obviously close to being a contending team. You know, there's teams that would be willing to make that jump, and I don't think the Nets owner gives a crap about the salary cap. So, I there's teams that are willing to jump in, but it's like, you know, like you said, I think that the longer Denver waited and the longer they continue to wait, the harder it's going to get for them. And now I know that I've heard that they're looking for December 15th, when everybody who was signed as a free agent this summer again becomes available in trades. But I don't know who that really frees up that they're going to love. It might free up some people who could get moved for picks, but I'm not sure how radically it changes the situation. We'll see.
Now, do you think the notion that he may possibly sign with the Knicks anyway is scaring teams away?
I'm not sure that it just scares teams away so much as, you know, yes and no. I mean, he has leverage in that. You know, if the Nuggets tried to trade him to Memphis or the Clippers, or, you know, actually the Clippers could probably put together a nice package.
Right.
If they did that and Carmelo didn't sign, you know, the Clippers wouldn't do it for that reason. They know that they would not be able to re-sign him. And so it's, in a sense, he's got leverage there. But he also wants the extension under this CBA. So, I mean, there's got to be some give and take. He can't. Unless he's willing to leave money on the table, and I don't know how committed he is. Is he willing, you know, and because we don't know what the CBA is, we don't know if we're talking, is he leaving $5 million on the table or $15 million, or, you know, we don't know what that number is. So it's how big a risk he wants to take. You know, is New Jersey good enough because they're moving to Brooklyn? You know, there's a lot of questions that are just it's hard to say. And right now, Denver's kind of I don't think anybody quite understands how they're playing it. So.
And last night, the Miami Heat, they had their home opener. Lots of glitz, lots of glamour. Everybody was there. The house was packed.
Yeah.
And the big three. They dominated and they blew out the Orlando Magic 96-70. What's your impression three games in about this Miami Heat team?
You know, it's funny. I'm just working on something for the site for later today on it. What's impressed me, you know, the question was, can you exploit them defensively? Can they, because they're running, you know, Chalmers the point guard or Arroyo, and they don't really have a great center, are there things you can do to exploit them? Their defense has been really good this season. And I've, you know, their offense has struggled some, but I don't, with the talent they have, I don't have any questions they're going to put up some points and that they're going to find some kind of groove and figure that end of the floor out. If they continue to defend like this, and be so active, they become a much better team than I had expected, and I think we'd expected them to be, you know, most people had, you know, to be one of the best teams in the East. So I'm fairly impressed, but, you know, it's three games is a tiny, tiny sample size, and so it's looking at the numbers. You know, right now teams are not shooting well against them right up at the rim. They're holding that percentage down, and they're hanging in that category with teams like Orlando and the Spurs and teams with these long front lines that Boston that always cause people trouble when they get in close. Miami doesn't have that, so I don't – three games in, is that just a fluke, or are they actually able to defend the rim that well? Or was it just they run into – you know, they ran into Orlando on the second night of a back-to-back, and Orlando was tired legs and ice cold. I mean, Orlando doesn't shoot that poorly. They right. forced them into bad shots, but they're not that bad a shooting team. You know, that's a team that makes its bread and butter on the three, and they just missed them. So you know, we'll see. It's a long season, but they look pretty. You know, if their defense keeps up like this, they're going to be a very good team.
And it seems like to me, in watching them, that they are deferring to each other, and they are playing. And some nights it could be Dwayne Wade, some nights it could be LeBron, and I guess in some nights it's going to be Chris Bosh. So it seems like right now, as of right now, they are deferring to each other very well.
Yeah. It's been that part of it's gone pretty well. They're still clearly trying to figure out fit and picks and some of this stuff, but, you know, that's to be expected, especially after Wade missed the whole preseason. You know, it was going to be that way.
Right. We're talking to Kurt Healy, ProBasketballTalk.com. Now, Kurt, there was a situation in Boston where you had Delonte West and Vaughn Wafer. Apparently these two got into a little physical altercation after practice. What is the talk around the league about this situation?
It sounds like the Celtics aren't letting anybody go or doing anything, but it's, you know, it's Delonte West. It's Delonte West trying to prove he's not crazy, because there was this allegedly started because there was a leak into the Boston media that somebody had said Delonte's acting like he's off his meds. And Delonte had decided that this was Vaughn Wafer. It may or may not be. I don't know. But, you know, at the end of the day, Delonte decides to prove he's not crazy by attacking Wafer in the locker room. And the Celtics have a pretty strong locker room. They're going to sit on it and think they can hold it together. But we'll see. They need the depth. You know, at first there was talk of them cutting Wafer cutting Delonte because they're frustrated with him. But, you know, he'd be one of their better bench players. And, you know, they look around the East and realize they're going to need him. So my guess is nothing. My guess is that they try to ride it out because they've got such strong personalities in the locker room.
That's interesting that you say that, because it seemed like Doc Rivers was clearly frustrated with having to deal with all this. And I mean, I do agree with what you're saying, that he is talented and he will add to their depth, but is a guy like this on a team like that worth having to deal with, you know, these issues?
That's a really good question, and you can be sure they're debating it in the Celtics front office. And I can tell you for sure that there's not consensus there, that you get different things from different people out of Boston. So right now, it sounded like Danny Ainge's camp wants to hold him for a while, and, you know, ultimately he's the decision maker. You know, and this is all without Delonte having stepped on the court yet. You know, he's only, what, three games into the 10-game suspension now. So, it may be one of those, like, we're going to sit on it for now, but he's one incident away from it being a bigger problem. Mm. And it, you know, he's not a guaranteed deal until I think it's January or whatever. So I mean, they can just cut him free if they need to.
And I don't like to think that locker room could handle Delonte West with Kevin Garnett and
yeah.
Paul Pierce in there. And so I
yeah.
like to
and Ray Allen. I mean, that's a, yeah. With and Ray Allen and now Shaq, who Shaq, while a big
right.
and dominating personality, is the kind of guy who will who will keep people in line too. I mean, there's a lot of strong veterans on that team and a lot of strong veterans who realize that they've got 1 or 2 years and then that's it. And they're not going to mess around. So
now we're through the first few days of the season. Any surprises so far for you?
It's a little early to see if some of this stuff holds out. I mean, I watched Golden State last night and they were pretty impressive and against the Clippers. But is that, we're 1 or 2 games in. Let's see how some of these things really start to go. You know, If you're going to pick one, a team I thought that was going to take a step back and maybe taking a step forward, it's Memphis. They beat Dallas last night. They were undefeated in the preseason. They need to find their groove. You know, I'm always leery of teams that are getting better because they didn't pick anybody up, because they just expect everybody on the roster to get better. But that seems to be the case. They seem to be playing a lot better. So, again, it's a long season. We'll see how that holds up, and they're not going to be elite in the West, but that's a team that I thought would take a step back and may actually step up into the playoffs in the West. You know, and there's going to be space there because the Suns don't look that great. There's some other teams that are struggling. So.
And maybe Cleveland is not as bad as we first thought.
Cleveland, I mean, they looked bad last night, but that was kind of a bad setup for them. I still think Toronto will end up being the worst team in the league at the end of the year. We'll see. Cleveland's, they've got a few guys there, and they get Mo Williams back and a few. We'll see. I don't think LeBron's supporting cast last year was that great, but I don't think it was as bad. It wasn't like he was carrying the Nets around. You know, that was a pretty good team. So there was some talent there, and they're going to win some games. What's going to be interesting with them is this. If they're on pace to, say, win 40 games and fight for one of those last playoff spots, they'll probably stick there. If they're going to land in the 30s, if they're going to be 7, 8, 10 games out of the playoffs, and they realize it going into the trade deadline, do they get rid of Jameson? Do they start blowing up some of the assets they have that a contending team would want just to try to stock for the future? I mean, that's one thing to watch. They're one team that could go that direction. So,
well, I think we're going to see that in the season. That's going to be an interesting point.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. So,
Kurt Heeling, ProBasketballTalk.com. Kurt, you're working on a piece today about the Boston Celtics, correct? I'm sorry, the Miami Heat, correct?
Yeah, Miami Heat defense, and that'll be up some point later today, depending on how focused I am.
Make sure you check it out later today.
College football games are starting, so we'll see how my focus goes.
Later today, make sure you check it out. Kurt Heeling, ProBasketballTalk.com. Kurt, thank you for stopping by, sir, and love to have you back in the future.
Yeah, I'd love to be there. Thanks for having me. Bye.
Thank you. Kurt Heeling, ProBasketballTalk.com. I want to thank Devin Alexander, WBC and IBF champion, for stopping by. Devin has a big fight on HBO World Championship Boxing on January 29th, 2011. So make sure you check him out there against Timothy Bradley. It will be a unification fight. And also, we want to thank Kurt Heeling, ProBasketballTalk.com, for stopping by and giving us his insight on the first few days of the NBA season. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant, where you can listen to this show and other shows. Next show is scheduled for Wednesday, November 3rd, so make sure you check it out there. And also, you can follow this show on Twitter at GoForItGant. That's at Twitter, GoForItGant, so make sure you check it out there. Want to thank everybody for listening, everybody for stopping by. And again, make sure you check this show out and past shows at GoForItGant and gmail.com. That's where you can email the show. But make sure you check out this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/